And it will be a busy week in international news as the Indian Prime Minister visits the White House today and the military offensive continues in Mosul to retake control of that Iraqi city from ISIS rebels. For an in-depth look at world events coming up this week, we're joined now by our colleague at the BBC, Poona Ghadoosi. And Poona, later today, India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi will meet with President Trump at the White House. So what could the Indian and the U.S. leaders gain from this visit?
Correct, Lauren. The main thing they will be looking for, according to one official who's involved in this visit, is chemistry. This will be their first face-to-face meeting, and we'll have to see how they'll hit it off. Of course, the Obama years seemed filled with trade opportunities between India and the U.S., better defense relationship, and also they were working together to forge the U.S.-India nuclear deal. And of course, they worked very closely together on the Paris Climate Change Agreement as well. But Mr. Trump's election has potentially altered that trajectory, if not ended it, maybe even. Mr. Trump is all about putting America first, as you very well know yourself. He's about controlling immigration. Take this, for instance, Mr. Trump's scathing attack on India when the U.S. withdrew recently from the Paris Accord.
India makes its participation contingent on receiving billions and billions and billions of dollars in foreign aid from developed countries.
And the White House has also made it clear that it wants to reform the H-1B work visa. That's the visa that has for many years allowed thousands of Indian technology workers to make their way to Silicon Valley, study there, get jobs and become really successful. Mm. But Mr. Trump should remember also that India could be an important partner for the U.S. as well. And that's for several reasons. One is that a stronger India can balance the scales with regards to China's expanding influence in the region, something that has been worrying Mr. Trump. And two is that India has major defense spendings, and this could allow U.S. companies to invest in India's defense sector and its nuclear markets. For Prime Minister Modi, this visit could also give him a chance to strike a personal bond with Mr. Trump. This could allow him to discuss these contentious subjects like the climate change and the H-1B visas, where they have very different views from each other right now. But as I mentioned, how this chemistry between the two leaders works out will probably partially shape the future of the U.S.-India relationship for years to come.
And Thursday is the third anniversary of the day the Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi proclaimed himself the leader of all Muslims in Mosul and named the caliphate the quote-unquote Islamic State. So tell us, where is this so-called caliphate today?
Lauren, it was exactly 3 years ago. In fact, this Thursday it will be 3 years since al-Baghdadi declared the caliphate, as you mentioned. But today we see the so-called Islamic State is definitely at its weakest, and the Iraqi offensive to remove the IS forces from Mosul is apparently in its final phase today, and just about a square mile is left for them to recapture from IS. In fact, an Iraqi commander said today that the operation to liberate Mosul would be over in days. We're witnessing a clear change in the tempo here in the fight against IS militants, both in Iraq and Syria. In Syria also, their last stronghold of Raqqa is in a similar situation. The US-backed forces there also are advancing, and they're taking the territory back bit by bit. But of course, what does remain a serious concern now will be that these fighters who are currently in Iraq and Syria, they're mostly foreigners anyway, they may end up escaping the battlefield and returning to other countries in Asia or Europe and building pockets of jihadism again, pockets similar to those who've carried out recent attacks in European and Asian cities. And that could really be a concern.
Right. And this week, it will be 20 years since Britain handed back Hong Kong to China. So how do the people there see their identity today and their allegiance right now?
It is a very difficult issue, especially for the youth. On Thursday this week, China's President Xi Jinping is expected to visit Hong Kong. There's contention among many in the territory. Many are calling for self-determination and even independence from mainland China. A few years back in 2014, you may remember there were massive democracy protests that paralyzed the city for months. There were calls for independence. You may even remember seeing those colorful but very angry protest images on TV of what was at the time called the Umbrella Revolution. In March this year, an electoral committee of about 1,200 members, and not ordinary people who go to the vote boxes, but an electoral committee who were allegedly pro-China as well, voted, and of course, no surprise, that China's preferred candidate won in the election. Hong Kong's new chief executive or leader, whose name is Carrie Lam, gave the BBC's China editor Carrie Gracie, also named Carrie, a rare interview. She dismissed the allegations of being a Chinese puppet there.
We are a very free society, and we respect people expressing their views freely and orderly.
If the Chinese parliament was to say that freedom of expression in Hong Kong did not cover calls for independence, what would be your position on that?
I think Hong Kong is an inseparable part of the People's Republic of China. Everybody could have a view, but whether that expressing a view constitutes an offense, the calling for independence have to be put into the context of what the law says as well.
Well, she's definitely got a difficult job ahead. As I said, tensions with China are evidently on the rise.
The BBC's Poona Gadusi. Poona, thanks as always.
Pleasure as always.